ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
It was later in the evening, and I had gone to the back fridge to get a glass of wine. And she came in to me and she was like, "Mum, something I want to tell you, and I don't know how you're going to act." And I thought, oh, this is an intervention. I'm drinking wine on a school night, you know. And I went, "Yeah, babe." And she said, "I just want to know if I can go out on a date." Well, I was relieved A, it wasn't about my drinking, but completely shocked because where did that come from?
Ah, young love. Cast your minds back to that feeling of getting your first real boyfriend or girlfriend. It's just so exciting. But for parents of teenagers, it raises some tricky questions like, are sleepovers okay? And how do we have those awkward conversations about the big issues like safe sex, consent, and pregnancy? Hi, I'm Bec Sparrow, host of Parental as Anything Teens. And today's episode is all about young love and, oh my God, am I having sex? Sam, which is what we call all our parents to protect their identity, has two daughters, one who is 16 and the other is 13. Recently, the 16-year-old got her first boyfriend.
They would probably see each other once a week. He's grade 12. He's not quite a year older, but has a license and a car. So they're quite independent in that regards of going out on their dates.
So it's a few months in and they've been on some dates but haven't had a sleepover yet. And now he's asked your daughter to go away with him for two nights with his family. And so now it's like, okay, the rubber is hitting the road.
And because quite early.
Yes.
Quite early, which was a bit, right.
Yeah.
Mate, this is a big deal.
A massive deal. And it gives a whole new meaning to the word sleepovers. Gone are the days of pillow fights and movie marathons. And now it's all about trying not to think about what is going on in that bedroom. So how do we respond as parents when our teens ask if they can spend the night with a partner? And how do parents navigate this stuff? Luckily, Tessa Opie is here. Now, she is the founder and director of In Your Skin, which is a relationships and sexuality education business. So let's say a teen has come home and announced that they have a boyfriend or a girlfriend. Da, da, da. And parents are trying not to freak out. What are the first things we should be doing as parents?
Well, I'd be wanting to know about the new partner. I would be trying to suss out what is my child's sense or what's the kind of emotion here. Are they excited to talk about it? What do they like about their partner? How did they meet them? But ultimately, we want to be showing our young people with our conversation and behaviour that we are excited for them and that most importantly, we are here to talk and we want to share this journey with them to the extent that they will have us be a part of that journey.
Okay, Tess, so tell me this. What is the general age of a first relationship?
That's difficult to answer because we're finding more and more so that young people are defining relationships very differently and perhaps they're having different types of relationships. So one thing for me that is always confronting is that we have about 60% of high school students who report being sexually active.
Wow, 60%.
And the vast majority of those young people report that their most recent sort of sexual encounter was with someone who is a regular partner or whom they're in a romantic relationship with. What we also know is almost half of those students also report at least one incident of unwanted sex.
And Tess, when you say unwanted sex, do you actually mean sexual assault?
We are talking about feeling pressured from a partner. We are talking about intoxication. We are talking about not feeling as though they could say no because they were worried about sort of potential negative consequences. We're also talking about peer pressure playing a role in that as well.
All of these factors, like the peer pressure, the expectations around sexual acts, can really weigh on the minds of parents. And even though Sam likes her daughter's boyfriend, the idea of her spending a night away with him made her pause.
He has grandparents at the beach. has always had holidays and school holidays, you know, sort of at the beach, and it's very much his second home. So when she'd brought it up, it was probably more of so early. She was excited that she'd been sort of asked, I think nervous and almost expecting us to say no.
And of course, different families have different ideas about how this should be handled.
One of her mates went, oh my gosh, I can't believe you're talking about going to the coast with him. My parents won't let us have sleepovers and we've been together for 8 months. My comment was, yeah, but sleepovers is very different to a trip away. I said, this is special and you're, you know, because he lives so close, there's no reason for her to have sleepovers at this stage.
So in Sam's case, we're not talking about regular sleepovers where sex is likely just yet. And just to be clear, Sam's allowing her daughter to go on a special trip with her boyfriend and his family where there will be strict boundaries in place, including separate bedrooms. And after that, as a parent, she's not quite ready for her daughter to be having regular sleepovers. This is the million-dollar question, Tess. No pressure on you, but parents are saying, is it okay to let your child have their romantic partner over for a sleepover?
Absolutely yes.
Did you hear that, everybody? Tess is saying yes. Okay, let's unpack this. Yes, and tell me why you're saying yes.
Okay, so if your child comes to you and says, Mum, things have progressed and I would really like them to come for a sleepover, firstly, pat yourself on the back as a parent because you are an askable, approachable parent. So that alone is huge. Celebrate that. Secondly, how wonderful that they have asked you if they can have the sleepover at your house, because then you can take great comfort in knowing that they are going to be safe. You can have the conversations you know that they need to prepare for that.
Look, I know talking about this stuff with our teens is super awkward, but if your child is sexually active or you think they're about to be, then you kind of got to have these chats. And it's way less awkward than having to go straight into talking about an unwanted pregnancy or an STI. Plus, it means that they're going to be safer exploring their sexuality. And that is what we want.
And they are not behind a bush. They are not in a car. There is no one there filming them or getting footage because they're doing it in a public place. It's not going to wind up on the internet or social media.
And what rules or boundaries should parents then, or are there any, that they should put in place? What do you think?
I think absolutely there should be boundaries. I think that your child, your young person needs to be wildly respectful of you, because what you are doing is very generous. I think that it's very reasonable for a parent to say to their child, I'm happy for it to happen here because it's about your health and safety, but we also need some respect from you or some signals from you that you appreciate, I guess, the significance of this.
So what kind of boundaries, Tess?
Like no nudity in the house. You know, please be fully clothed when you join us in the kitchen. I think, you know, talking about noise. No one in the family wants to feel as though they're listening to sort of two mating bisons is a reasonable thing to say. So I think it's that if you want to be sexually active and you want to be treated like an adult, I'm happy to meet you halfway.
Now, maybe you're listening to this and your head has fallen off. I get it. For a lot of parents, the idea of their teen having a trip away with their boyfriend or girlfriend or even a sleepover would be a hard no. And that's okay. Every parent has the right to decide what is best for their child. When her 16-year-old daughter asked if she could go on a two-day holiday with her boyfriend, Sam thought hard about her decision.
I kind of just stopped to look at the situation in regards to A, it's somewhere that means a lot to him. And then the other part is, like, luckily, we know the family and we know that they'd be absolutely, you know, looking after them. And also because it's so early in the relationship, I'm not really worried about the whole physical, it's, you know, it could, we're not there yet. So definitely there's upstairs, downstairs, they'll be separated. And I think too, it's kind of sweet that they are so naive that they don't get that. And I think probably it's better that it is early because we know I don't have to worry about all the other stuff. If it was 8 months down the track, I'd be like, oh, what are you doing?
So according to Sam, her daughter isn't having sex yet. That's all down the track. But teenagers will be at different stages at different times. I mean, when I was 16, I was writing fan mail to Michael J. Fox and I'm still watching Young Talent Time. So there's that. So Tess, what should parents do if their child wants to have a sleepover at their boyfriend or girlfriend's house? What should we be aware of?
You know that your house is a safe place, but I guess you can't make that guarantee for the partner's house. And I can see that that certainly causes parents a lot of angst. What we say in that situation is that you ask your child to send you a text every couple of hours, just letting you know that they're safe. But also you can go one step further and you and your child can have a safe word or a particular question that if they use that in a text message, you know that they are discreetly saying, "Mum, please come and pick me up." And so that might be, "Hi, Mum, has Nana called yet?"
Now, here's my next question. Do you talk to the other teen's parents?
I love this because, Beck, you're asking so many questions that I just don't think have black and white answers to. Considerations are, do you already know those parents? Have you had conversations before? I think that you could ask your young person, has their partner spoken to their parents about it? Do their partner's parents know that they intend on staying at your house? I think you can probably gather some information that way, but I would be reluctant to go straight in for the contact and the how do we feel about this sleepover.
I wonder how many parents then sometimes get a phone call from another set of parents who aren't on the same page. And then how you'd move forward from that. If you've got one set of parents who are like, we do not approve of any kind of a physical relationship happening. It's tricky, this stuff, isn't it?
It can be tricky, but I mean, we all know the more we say no, the more we just send it sort of underground or elsewhere. So, you know, the other family might say absolutely no to sleepovers. You know, we should be studying. We've got different priorities, or I just don't believe in, you know, intimacy before marriage or whatever their opinion might be. Well, that might put an end to sleepovers because it would be sort of remiss to completely ignore how those parents are feeling.
Yeah, I mean, we've got to be really mindful and respectful of other people's family rules and boundaries and values when we're dealing with this stuff.
But if it's important enough to our young people, if they really want to be intimate with each other, they're still going to do it.
How are our kids learning what a healthy romantic relationship looks like? What do you think? Where are they getting their intel from?
I think the young people who have a really great appreciation for an understanding of a healthy relationship, I think they're having conversations with their parents about this. I think their parents are helping them to analyse media, which might be a series on Netflix, it might be in a movie. Young people who really understand what green flags and red flags might look like in a relationship have parents who are talking to them about this sort of stuff. Sometimes people will say, well, a healthy relationship's, it's about respect and trust and, you know, it's about equality. But what do they look like in a relationship? Because sometimes words are just words and we need to know what they really mean.
So, okay, so then tell me, what does respect look like and equality look like in a relationship?
So, you know, I think we might be saying to our young people, in a really respectful relationship, you are giving each other the space to be yourselves. We can talk about equality with our young people. Are they addressing each other's needs equally and placing equal importance on each other's roles in that relationship, on each other's lives and experiences, on each other's emotions? Are they trustworthy?
What do you do though, Tess, if you don't think your teen's partner is good for them?
This is such a tricky question because often as well, if you, even if it's not a teen, even if you have an adult child and you suspect that it's a very unhealthy relationship, if we're too vocal about that, sometimes we can contribute to them becoming further isolated. And I think that we can gently express our concerns, and I think we can certainly let our young person know that, yeah, we are worried they are not the strongest, brightest, most robust versions of themselves with their new partner, but that, of course, you support their decisions and, most importantly, you'll be there if and when the whole thing does go pear-shaped.
Talking to our kids about sex can feel really awkward and uncomfortable for them and for us. Sam has a close relationship with her daughter and has started to have these conversations with her.
I don't think she'll come straight and tell me. But if I was to say, mate, do we need to go and organise some birth control and everything else, I think she would be like, yeah, okay. I have said to her before, I was like, when do we need to start talking about consent? When do we? And she's like, oh, I'm like, you know, no one's going to make me do anything I don't want. She's like, oh, I got an all-girls school. You don't think I don't already know about it? I went, you might understand the mechanics of it, but there's much more to it about that that we probably need to have a conversation. She's like, all right.
But if she's turning 17, you know, in a few months, and she says, I'm going to start having sex with him, are you comfortable with them doing that in your house?
Well, I'd much rather that than a party.
Or a park.
Correct. Or anywhere.
Car.
Anywhere. Yeah. But I don't necessarily want her to tell me, okay, today's the day, or I don't want it. But I'm not going to be naive to think that that's not going to happen. I have faith that they will do it when they're comfortable with each other. But it's got to happen somewhere. And look, you know what? As long as it's not my room.
Okay, Tess, what else should we be talking to our teens about?
I think that we should be talking to them about barrier protection and contraception. There's sexual health clinics they can access for free and that are confidential if they don't want to tell us. If we sort of say, hey, don't feel embarrassed, don't feel ashamed, don't feel awkward, because if you feel like you can talk about this pragmatically, you're more likely to talk with an intimate partner about different sort of strategies you might need to use to keep each other safe and happy. You might be more likely to talk to a parent.
Yes, that's what we want. I mean, I never would have spoken to my parents about sex, but that is not the relationship I want to have with my own kids. And we want our teens to be comfortable saying to a boyfriend or a girlfriend, I'm not okay with that, especially when it comes to sex and if they're feeling pressured into something. So how do we have those tricky conversations about consent or safe sex or, you know, red flags for coercive control? Do you have any tips about how we start those conversations with our teens?
Yeah, well, firstly, Beck, I think we start those conversations with kids who are so much younger than their teenage years. There's no such thing as the talk or, like, you know, the birds and the bees. It's not this one event, you know, where we really well equip our young people in a 10-minute conversation with sort of, you know, matters of sexual health and safety. It's this ongoing dialogue. It's a conversation that we revisit.
Totally. And look, I know that our teens are probably just going to be rolling their eyes, and if we start trying to talk about sex, they're going to be thinking, please stop talking, mum and dad. But through these chats, what we're doing is we're showing that we care about their opinions, but also about their safety, and that we want them to know what a respectful sexual relationship looks like. Because sex is not just about the mechanics, it's about intimacy.
We all want to experience intimacy and pleasure, whatever that might mean. So I think there's got to be a huge conversation around pleasure. I think there has to be a huge conversation around bodily autonomy and making sure that we have young people who know so, so comprehensively that they are the boss of their bodies.
So Tess, talk to me about consent and what teens' understanding of it is.
They're actually really, really, really interested to know what consent is in a more kind of concrete way. You know, the government tells us that consent is verbal, enthusiastic, affirmative agreement, or maybe it's permission. And I think that conceptualizing consent as permission is a disaster for our young kids, because many of them then just think, all we need to do is get a yes. We talk about it as a verb because, you know, it is also a verb. It should be this mutually collaborative, mutually participatory process between two people that's threaded throughout the entire intimate interaction.
So how do we teach them about what consent looks like and that it's a constant checking in rather than, say, one yes and it's ticked off?
If our young people don't feel confident enough to say, do you want to do this? Yes, I'd like to do this, 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 but not this. How can they be attentive to each other's nonverbal cues and body language? What should they be looking out for? Lying still and not moving is not an indication of consent. What would show a young person that their partner is enthusiastically involved? Are they reciprocating with, you know, equal or greater levels of enthusiasm? Are they removing their own clothes? Are they taking a condom out of their handbag and taking it out of the wrapper and then passing it to you? We want young people to start to think about, well, if I want to be sexually active and we've, you know, got to be consenting, if consent's a doing word, how can I do it well? well? Like, what skills do I need? How can I essentially be a really sexually intelligent, sexually considerate partner so that myself and my intimate partner can both have an equally fabulous time together? And I think they want the skills to be able to do that, because that's not the stuff they can access online. They certainly can't access that by looking at online pornography. They're not necessarily accessing that through rom-coms or Netflix series. But they want to know how to do consent really, really well.
Some people might have younger children in the household.
That's right.
And they do worry, I think, about what the younger children are going to be exposed to. So I definitely think the no nudity in the house and keeping the volume down are critical.
But also I think that's really fabulous for the younger siblings as well, because all of the global research shows us that the more our young people know about sexual intimacy in terms of, you know, safety, barrier protection, mutual consent, mutual pleasure, you know, red flags, sexual violence prevention. So the young people who have actually had access to more conversations and more information, that is, you know, accurate and reliable, those young people are more likely to delay what's referred to as their sexual debut. And in doing so, the research shows us that they're more likely to describe their first sexual experience as safe, positive, mutually consenting, mutually pleasurable. They're also less likely to be exposed to an STI or have an unplanned pregnancy. So it's sort of a win-win.
And then the whole family knows that once that Ed Sheeran song is playing, something's happening. If you hear Ed Sheeran being played, something's happening in that room, so everyone leaves. Sam has another daughter who is younger and is watching her big sister's relationship from the sidelines, and she's super invested.
She's living this relationship vicariously through her sister, loving every minute of it, wants to know everything, which is great because she asks all the questions I'm dying to ask.
Sam's younger daughter is 13, and while she's not ready to date yet, Sam is worried that the relatively smooth sailing they've had with the older daughter will not be the case with her.
She's really high energy, so I think she's attracted to people who match that, and I fear that she will pick people who are, you know, fig jam. So I'm just like, heads up, mate, it's gonna be different.
Now, Tess, can you have different rules for different kids, do you think?
Absolutely not, because they'll see that and that will make them rebel even more. That's my gut reaction to that question. You know, my advice is keep her close. Arm her. She's 13 and maybe that child is in a position to have some of those conversations as well. So, again, use that as a teaching opportunity.
If I ask you for your final words of advice for parents who are navigating this right now, like if you could have one piece of advice that all parents heard, if you could just get one thing through to them, what would it be?
Keep them close. Let them know that you are a judgment-free zone. Point them in the direction, if you don't feel well-equipped yourself to have these conversations, point them in the direction of evidence-based resources and websites and professionals. Give them every indication you can that you care about their health and safety. Be positive about their relationships. Be positive about sexuality. Let them know that their safety is more important perhaps than your own value system or what you think should be going on.
Oh, there feels like there's so much to worry about when our teens enter the very grown-up world of dating and first sexual experiences. But it's going to be okay. First, let's match their excitement about their relationship. Go along with the journey with them and show them that you are there for any questions and concerns without judgment. Making fun of them and teasing them, "Hello, dads, yes, I'm talking to you," is not the way to go. Know that making sure that they know about safe sex, consent, STIs, porn, and pregnancy is not just one conversation. Start young, talk about it often, and look out for those teachable moments. Sleepovers. Okay, if you feel like your teen is ready and your family is ready, they're okay. But set ground rules, especially if there are younger siblings in the house. And if you're not ready for any of this, that's totally fine too. You can say no, but just try and keep the dialogue going with your teen about the relationship so it's not completely shut down. And lastly,
know that these awkward conversations and giving them information is the best way to make sure that they delay having sex and that their first sexual experience is a positive one. Thanks to Tessa Opie from In Your Skin for sharing her wisdom on this issue, and to Sam for sharing her concerns about both her daughters. Good luck. This podcast was recorded on the traditional lands of the Turrbal and Yagara peoples. Parental as Anything Teens is mixed by Anne-Marie de Betancourt. It's produced by Hannah Riesch and Josie Sargent. The supervising producer is Tamar Cranswick, and Alex Lolbach is the executive producer. And make sure you follow us on the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, it's Yumi Steins here, host of the Ladies We Need to Talk podcast. Ladies goes deep on the personal stuff that's hard to talk about, even with your closest friends.
I just kind of thought, well, I'm broken. There's something seriously damaged in my body that I'm not getting my period.
From sex to our ever-changing bodies to the ups and downs of relationships, nothing is off limits. Get us in your ears on the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.